As the SCF co-facilitator has just mentioned, we have good sources of technical information in front of us. And these are provided by parties and observers and the Standing Committee on Finance, which I am confident will serve an excellent basis for technical discussion during this in-session workshop. As you know, this joint in-session workshop will inform the work of the SAPSTA as referred to in Decision 2/CP17, paragraph 19. In this regard, the summary capturing the outcomes of the technical discussions and the update which the SCF will provide at the next SAPSTA session in Paris are important activities which I look forward to. Therefore, I would like to encourage you to engage constructively in identifying the gaps and identifying options for improvements that can be made in the methodologies for the reporting of financial information. In closing, I wish you productive and fruitful discussions over the next 3 hours. I will very much look forward to learning the outcomes of the discussions. And I would like to thank for the invitation also. It's a pleasure for me to be here this morning. And I wish all of you, dear co-chairs, the rapporteur of the SBI, distinguished delegates and experts, representatives from observer organizations, ladies and gentlemen, very good work this morning. And again, I'm looking forward to the news from this discussion from this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And Mr. Rapporteur, over to you. Okay.
Thank you very much. Chair of the SAPSTA, Ms. Linda Watchtow, co-chair of SCF, Mr. Sini Nafu, and co-facilitator, Mr. Roger Dungan, distinguished delegates and experts, representatives from observer organizations, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I'm pleased to be with you this morning to open the session, the in-session technical workshop, together with the chair of the SAPSTA, which, as introduced by the co-facilitators, is a joint activity between the three bodies of the convention. Chair of the SBI, Mr. Amina Yovoli, could not be here this morning due to unavoidable commitment, and he asked for your kind understanding. I will read this statement on his behalf. First of all, I would like to express my appreciations to the SCF co-chairs for giving due consideration early in the year and the chair of the SAPSTA for her due attention to this important workshop. In my remarks this morning, I would like to briefly share with you information on ongoing work on the SBI that is relevant to this important workshop. First, the SBI is in the process of revising the UNFCCC reporting guidelines for national communications of Annex I parties. Further discussions on this matter are taking place during the 42nd session of the SBI here in Bonn. The ongoing work on this matter has been informed by the views submitted by Annex I parties on their experiences with preparing their first biennial reports and the technical work of the Secretariat, all of which are relevant to the topics that this joint in-session workshop will address. Secondly, technical reviews of most of the 6th national communications and the first biennial reports submitted by Annex I parties have been completed. Last but not least, the multilateral assessment process has been well established and being implemented. 17 Annex I parties have multilaterally assessed in a workshop group session under SBI 41. 24 Annex I parties were multilaterally assessed in a working group session at SBI 42 during Thursday and Friday. Remaining 2 parties to be multilaterally assessed during SBI 43 session. This in-session technical workshop is an excellent opportunity to exchange perspectives on the gaps and options improvements in methodologies for reporting financial information. Therefore, I would like to encourage all participants to contribute to the discussions with ideas on concrete actions. I, too, will look forward to learning the outcomes of today's discussions. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Rapporteur, and thanks both for your good words of encouragement. I'm sure we'll make sure that we are focused very much on ways that we and by we, I mean everyone here, can really help provide good technical inputs into the work under the under this joint workshop. So here's how things will work today. We've got, roughly speaking, five segments. We've got some scene-setting presentations, discussion from, we have a panel of discussants who can provide some input in response to that, as well as their own thoughts. Then we have what should be quite familiar to those of you who have been participating in the long-term finance in-session workshops over the last year or so, some interactive group discussions in a format that will be very familiar to you. And then we'll come back and have some plenary reporting and conclusion. So during the first hour, we'll invite Ms. Ruta Bubnyeni and Dennis Turpak to give us some scene-setting presentations. They'll be followed by a brief discussion from the panellists, who will talk for, it says here in my instructions, 8 to 10 minutes each, but if they feel that they have given their input in 4 to 5 minutes, that would also be quite useful as well, on topics related to their scene-setting presentations and their own experiences and views. Today's panellists are sprinkled through the audience. I won't get them to stand up to introduce themselves now, but we've got from Belgium, Ms. Vicky Noens, from Ecuador, Andres Mogro, from E3G on behalf of the Climate Finance Group for Latin America and the Caribbean, Marcela Jaramillo, Stephanie Ockenden from OECD, and Weijin Lo from the World Bank as well. So in the second hour of the workshop, we'll have our interactive group discussion, and this is the bit that should be familiar to you. You'll have the opportunity to exchange your perspectives and provide views on the subject. We'll have discussion leaders. They're also sprinkled mysteriously through the audience and will become clear to you as we move to that session. We've got Sarah Conway, Gary, excuse me if I mispronounce your name, Tesaira from Malaysia, Jorge Castellamonte from Peru, and they will lead our discussion through. We'll have whiteboards or flip charts set up in various corners of the room, and every 20 minutes, I will ring this bell. I'll enjoy doing it. It's from Switzerland. And then you can switch between the groups and share your views. And for the discussants, it would be quite useful in that process if you can summarise briefly the discussion that you've just been having over the last 20 minutes or so, so that people who come in to the group know where you've got to, so that you don't repeat discussion and can really build on that and make sure that we really are focusing on concrete technical suggestions for improving the reporting methodologies as we've been instructed to do. They have some guiding questions. Hopefully, if you've again done your homework, you'll know what they are, but they'll also be projected up on the screen behind us during the session so you can really focus your attention on those. I'm going to enjoy ringing my bell. That's all I'm going to say on that. When the discussions are over, we'll round up the main points back to the plenary setting and report back so everyone knows where we got to. And then we will take those forward, and as we in the standing committee prepare our work, we will very much look forward to drawing on those. Now, I think the substitute chair has to disappear off for other important things, so we will thank you, Madam Chair, for your inputs and wish you well over the next few days on this and other bits of work. And thanks very much for coming. But with that in mind and without further ado, I'd like to invite Ruta up to the podium to give her scene-setting presentation. Over to you.
Thank you, Roger, for this invitation. I'm happy to talk here in this in-session workshop. So I will briefly go through two things. First, the work ongoing under the revision of the National Communication Reporting Guidelines. That has been mentioned by SBI co-chair, and I see some familiar faces from that negotiation group here as well. And secondly, I would give you some observations from the sixth national communication and first biannual report that has been submitted by Annex I parties and that has been observed and reported in the compilation and synthesis of the sixth national communication and first biannual report. So as you can see here, just to remind you, a little reminder where we are and where we have been. So you see that the Annex 1 Parties report following national communication reporting guidelines, those are quite a teenager, adopted in 1999. So in COP17, there was a reporting guidelines adopted for BR, and then COP18, biannual reporting common tabular format has been adopted. So following decision in COP17, a revision of the national communication reporting guidelines has been started in SBI 40, and the work is ongoing. Negotiation groups have been meeting each SBI session, and due at that time, there were a call for submission for views from parties, and in 2014, there were 6 submissions of those views from 4 parties, New Zealand, EU, Japan, and US. As well, following the request from COP17, the Secretariat has prepared a technical paper based on the views from parties, so that paper is available online if you'd like to inform yourself. At this session, at SBI 42, parties have started the discussion under agenda item about a revision of the reporting guidelines, and the co-chairs has produced a non-paper based on the technical paper. So this is where we are now. As you know very well, that biannual reporting and reporting guidelines and biannual reporting common tabular format has provided more detailed reporting requirements on finance compared to national communication. So, talking about the what parties report and what kind of challenges parties face, then reporting national communication and biannual reports. A few things could be mentioned. Those outcomes or those observations have been found, and the Secretariat has been preparing the 6 compilation synthesis report of the 6 national communication and biannual report, as well as it has been noted by the reviewers doing the technical reviews of national communication and biannual reports. So there are some discrepancies observed between the what parties report in biannual report and national communication and in the common tabular format and by national communication. So you can see sometimes differences in sectoral attributions, different amount reported for the same time of activity. Sometimes you can find different level of precision. You can find different currencies used by the parties or different reporting periods. As well as sometimes you find discrepancies reported between contributions to multilateral institutions. You have different figures reported in biannual report, national communication on core and general attributions, as well as for climate-specific contributions. Also, you have sometimes difference in status of the funds, whether that is pledged, committed, or provided. And in some cases, you have differences in amounts reported. All in all, the reviewers have observed that the information provided in NC6 compared to that in NC5 is more complete and more transparent, and that the reporting in biannual report provides a much greater level of transparency, and that those observations have been very well reflected into the party submissions provided following the call of COP under the item on the revision of national communication reporting guidelines. So there are 2 main approaches that parties suggest to be used while revising the national communication guidelines, which, as I mentioned, is almost 16 years old. So first of all, to help parties to overcome the challenges, party suggests to streamline the reporting information between BR, BRCTF, and national communication. And in this case, you would increase transparency and consistency on the reporting information, as well as there are a number of outdated elements, and parties suggest to update those elements, which might include year sectors or reporting tables. Most particularly on finance, parties suggest to streamline the national communication guidelines or make it similar with the biennial reporting common tabular format. And in particularly, we speak those who read the common tabular format tables. So for finance, table 7 is quite important. And there are three tables on finance in common tabular format. One is summary information, another contribution through multilateral channels, and then contribution through bilateral, regional, and other channels. So parties suggest to include those tables in the national communication. Another suggestion coming from the parties' views is to provide clarification on key terminology, as well as provide additional information on definition and methods used for estimating the financial resources, as well as some parties suggest to provide additional information on challenges in reporting of financial support, as those who are here in this room and do provide data into those reports, they do know very well that there are quite some challenges in providing the detailed information requested. So with this, I would like to thank you very much for your attention, and I hope that you will have a good outcomes of this workshop, and I believe that the outcome of this workshop could inform the parties and negotiators what are doing the ongoing work under Division of International Communication Guidelines. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rita. And I think the presentation will be on the website. So yeah, if folks need to go back and check their notes, then it will be available there as well. Very pleased also now to introduce Dennis Turpak, who should be known to a good number of you. And he will give us his thoughts on methodologies for reporting financial information. Dennis, over to you.
Thank you, Roger. I titled this slide Near-Term Possibilities because I wanted to focus on what might be done in a practical way between now and Paris. So good morning to all of you, and I hope you get some ideas out of this. Just a few things to keep in mind. With the exception of the OECD process and the Bloomberg New Energy Finance process, all the institutions that were involved in the biennial assessment have reported financial data for only a few years. So we're very much in the beginning stage of trying to work out the wrinkles that go along with trying to get better data. Improvements in the methodologies, I think, will require quite a few steps, and it's not going to be done overnight. It's going to take a couple of years. When we worked through the process of emission inventories, it took really 6 or 7 years to get to the point where most parties were reporting consistent data year after year of a reasonably good quality. So this isn't going to happen overnight. Another point is that, at least from the perspective of the BA, to form sort of a comprehensive picture, you need to have some sense of what not only developed countries are doing, but also some verification information from developing countries to go along with it to paint a more complete picture. Next slide. One thing that is important to keep in mind is that, I mean, from our perspective, and I say our, I mean the UNFCCC perspective, This is the business that the convention is all about. And so I put that at the top of this hierarchy. And it's really to, in simplified terms, to assess the commitments of Annex I countries and to develop a comprehensive picture of climate change finance. Now, there are a lot of other international public finance institutions that are involved in this business, and no doubt some of them would put themselves at the top of the pyramid and others, you know, and so forth. But they all have their own mandates to do things, and we draw on that information to the extent that we can. But there are quite a few challenges in trying to use that information. And then there's a lot of effort that gets done through private and domestic public institutions that is even underneath that. Now, there has been and is, and I'm sure there will be, continuing dialogue between the UNFCCC folks and the OECD and the MDBs and so forth and so on, and we're all learning together from that that dialogue. Next slide, please. So Ruta has already outlined some of the challenges that they found in pulling together the data from the BRs, and it includes things like limitations of regarding the sectors and how they're interpreted, differences in reporting between the BRs and the NCs. Now, this doesn't seem to me to be a rocket science problem to solve. I mean, you take one or the other way of reporting, and you say, let's do it for everybody, for everything. Done with it. Finished. Decision is over. So I would suggest that that's something to think about. There are a lot of open-ended categories where you get 20% of a country's information goes into core or other, and that is not transparent and does not help, really, the reporting process. So you need to fix something about this other category. And that's kind of related to the multilateral contributions. Use of different currencies, use of different reporting periods, use of different categories for reporting and status of funds. I think clarifications of those ought to be fairly simple. And I'll say something more about that in a minute. Next slide, please. Now, from the standpoint of the biennial assessment, there are different definitions that plagued us that can be worked on. The private sector data is limited. Domestic finance information exists only for a few countries. Adaptation data is just beginning to emerge. We're just learning how to do that. And the quality of the data varies quite a bit. Very few institutions, in fact, probably the UNFCCC goes through more of a review process than any of the other institutions involved in this, and certainly the private sector data. So the data quality varies a lot. Next slide, please. So from my perspective, what I would the priorities I would give for Paris would be to clarify the associated application of the CTF. And I would call that, I think that could be done with a set of instructions. In many cases, I think parties make mistakes in terms of how they report because they don't have clear instructions. And I'm purposely not calling them guidelines. I think they could be done outside the realm of preparing guidelines. Just prepare a set of instructions that would help the people filling out the CTF so they can do a better job. And the second thing that's related to that is modifications of the CTF. And that includes perhaps adding some sectoral coverage, perhaps clarifying how do you report MDB contributions. So I'd separate out the clarifications, which could be done through instructions, and modifications to the CTF. And I would not tinker with it too much, but I'm sure once you open up that basket, people will be inclined to add lots of things. But it's a multidimensional problem, and it is not easy to create a simplified table to capture the information. For the time being, I would do nothing about adaptation, energy efficiency, private sector investments, investments between emerging economies, but I'd monitor what is going on within the MDB and the OECD process, which is trying to harmonize efforts, and set that aside for the next couple of months and then come back to it after Paris. And then I would suggest that it might be possible to develop a simple, what I'm calling verification format for cataloging support received by non-Annex I parties. And my suggestion would be you have a simple document that says amount received, supporting country, the recipient institution, the purpose, mitigation or adaptation, and the instrument. Five things on a piece of paper. One sentence that says this is what could be done by way of cataloging information to verify the Annex I party information. Finally, somewhat tangentially related to methodological work is what could be done to get the ball rolling with regard to private sector information. We have very little insight into what the private sector is spending on energy efficiency, either asset finance or operation and maintenance. We don't know what they could tell us or what they're doing. And it might be just a way to sort of begin that dialogue might be to invite the private sector to provide information on investments that reduce emissions and build resilience and adaptation. And let's see what they say to us. And from there, we might be able to design more detailed efforts, and this might also help feed into the OECD process, research process that they have to look at private sector data. But that could be done. I'm not sure exactly where it would fit into the outcome of Paris, but it's a fairly simple invite that might take place. So these are some ideas for you to think about. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dennis. That's a really useful input into our discussions, and there's some pretty good ideas in there for you all to think about as we proceed to the group discussion. Now, I think I hadn't noticed at the start, forgive me, but we've got spots up on our table here for our discussants, so I'd invite them now to come on up and sit behind their flags. But while they're doing that, Saini, you have any thoughts or comments you'd like to add at this point?
No, just to thank again Dennis for the very concrete proposals, and also I know that the discussants have their slides or their presentation, but to reflect on some of the very concrete points Dennis has indicated, that would be helpful as well.
And I think I'd agree, and the other point I'd make is Ruta's presentation at the start is a really useful reference. And I certainly, as I think about work that we'll be doing over the next few months, we'll be referring to that as we go forward. So that's going to be a really useful thing. These will, of course, all be on the website. So I'd encourage you all, in addition to the very comprehensive, thorough, and in-depth preparation you've done for this workshop by reading all the submissions and technical papers, to also have a look at those as well in your spare time. It's worth the effort. Okay, so let's press on with the discussants, and we've got a stunning panel down the left of my table here, and I'm certainly very excited to have them here and looking forward to their contributions. We've given them fairly, to be frank, loose instructions, so it may very well be quite an entertaining session as they figure out what they're doing, but I'm hoping that they will give us some pearls of wisdom both on their reflections on the presentations that we've had, but I know certainly a couple of them have prepared some more detailed material, which will be, I'm sure, extremely useful inputs into group discussions. I'll encourage them again to be concise. I know you all want to get in and have these discussions. I don't want to ring my bell too much. Actually, that's not true, I do. But so don't give me excuses for that. I think the easiest thing to do will just be to work from your left to right. And is that right? Yeah, that's right. We'll start with Andres. You're first up.
Okay. I heard left to right. I thought, great, I'm the last one. All right. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Thank you. I want to start by thanking the Secretariat for extending their invitations to participate as a discussant in this workshop. My name is Andres Mogro. I work in the Ministry of Environment of Ecuador as a climate change negotiator. I'm Ecuador's lead negotiator on climate finance. I'm helping coordinate G77 for this agenda item, and I'm also advising the Ecuador board member of the GCF. I want to thank the Secretariat for them preparing the technical papers and the synthesis reports and all of the inputs that we have for this item. If I had known that the technical papers would go so deep into the submissions that have been presented by parties and observers for this item, I probably wouldn't have studied the submissions as much. But anyway, I think this workshop is very different from what I had imagined for two reasons. First, I have no idea why I was picturing myself in Room Beethoven in the Maritime. Turns out I was wrong. The second is that I wasn't imagining as much room for convergence and actual work. And when I was listening to Dennis's presentation, I was thinking, I wish he were part of my delegation. But I think this agenda item is very important for two main reasons, and I won't go very much into the first one because we were invited not to. But the first one is because of political negotiator-level reasons. And I think that when people see this agenda item, it gives the impression that there are no good methodologies or there are no methodologies for the reporting of financial information. And the fact that we have to develop them and to agree to them under the UNFCCC does give room for that interpretation, which I think is something that during this workshop we have to highlight and to strive not to believe. Because I think that part of the presentations that we've seen, part of the presentations that we're also going to see, and I think we have very good information coming from the OECD as well, will show that we do have, and there has been a lot of work at the international level on developing methodologies for the reporting of financial information. At least under the UNFCCC, we know that there's been a lot of advancement with regards to national communications and biennial reports. The common tabular format was, in fact, an achievement. And we know that a lot of Annex 1 parties have presented submissions and the work that they went through, apart from the work itself, apart from reading the national communications and reading their biennial reports, it's good to also take notice of the experiences that they're putting forward in the submissions. So I think that from that standpoint, the timing for the output of this item is crucial. We all know, and we're probably very much focused on the work that's going on under the ADP, but I think that the COP21 provides for a good framework for us to finish discussions on this issue. And of course, the advancement of what we do here in this workshop does provide and does feed into those discussions as well. The second reason I thought that this workshop is very important for us is more. It has more to do with the technical repercussions for the climate regime, and both for developed and developing countries. And by this, I mean it gives us great room to advance and address information gaps that I think have been very well addressed by the Standing Committee on their biennial assessment of climate finance flows. But that sadly, and I acknowledge this with regret, that when those very good technical inputs go into the negotiations, they have a tendency to be ignored. And I think that this is another space for us to highlight those important technical issues and try to push them forward, leading into a more concrete and more concise decision in COP21. And one of the informations, that among the information gaps that have been presented by the BA, and not just on the summary for policymakers, but also on the bigger report, which is actually a more useful but longer document, there's the issue of trying to define both where, and I always go into these issues when I try to explain at the national level what the problem with climate finance is that we haven't yet agreed, and there isn't much convergence on what it finances, where it goes to, where it comes from, which channels does it have to go through. And those are a lot of the issues that have been put forward by the SEF as acknowledged problems. And I think those are really important for us to address here. The other is that when you see the data that has been presented by the SEF on how much climate finance has been actually flowing at the international level, you see that it's somewhere in the range of 40 and 650 billion, which for me only reads as a 610 error margin, 610 billion error margin. So the conclusion that you can derive from these numbers is not the fact that we have either had very little or very much climate finance, but the fact that we don't really know where in those ranges it actually is. And that leads me to my first conclusion, which is that we haven't agreed on common methodologies that can address these informational issues. And this has very much to do with a point that was made by Dennis on the fact that it doesn't... agreeing to common reporting methodologies has to do with the content itself, but it also has to do with the agreement of all using the same methodology. So as long as, even though developed countries have used different methodologies among themselves, if by some miracle we manage to agree that we should all use the same, then that's an achievement in itself, other than the content and the specific technicities in the methodology. And as I said in my previous point, good methodologies do exist. And I acknowledge that because I've been trying to read and trying to do my best effort to understand what the OECD Development Assistance Committee is doing. And I think there's value in differentiating between principle and a significant objective or output of the financed activity when we refer to climate change. Climate change as being a principle or a significant objective of the output. And even though I think that there's a lot of value in the methodologies that are being developed by the OECD DAC, there are three problems that we still need to address. And I think that this workshop and discussions under the UNFCCC are a big opportunity for us to do that outside the technical work that the OECD is doing. And these three problems are mainly that the RIIO markers capture policy objectives of a funded activity, and it's a policy used to mainstream environment issues into development, but it does not quantify expenditure towards these objectives. So there is an inexact quantification of financial flows. And basically, this derives from a lack of understanding, a lack of common understanding on three things: on eligibility criteria to apply the markers, on application of multiple markets across RIIO conventions, and on the quantification of markers. And this, of course, leads to, it leaves a very big room for understanding and interpretation of where to apply these things. And I wanted to give a concrete example on this matter. a couple of months ago, about 6 months ago, there was a study published on climate finance received or mobilized to Ecuador. And it was a study that was prepared by an international NGO, but that sadly didn't receive the proper amount of cooperation from our government. So when the study was published, one of the conclusions was that during the last couple of years, an amount of around $3 to $4 billion on climate finance had been received by Ecuador, which worried us very much. And it worried us because the study included around $2 billion that had been mobilized to Ecuador as loans for the building of a train, a subway train that we're doing in the capital. But the problem with that specific project, for example, is that project is being built to address a transport crisis in Quito. Quito has the shape of a sausage. It's 3 kilometers wide and 100 kilometers long. So we have a very big transportation issue because with 1/7 the population of Ecuador, Quito has half the cars. So we can't move through Quito. They're building the train to address that, but they're not quantifying outputs in terms of climate change. And even though once you project a business as usual scenario where you buy a lot of cars to address the transportation issues, and you can project climate change mitigation components, part of that financing that's being received for that specific project, no part of financing that's being received for that specific project is used to quantify those outputs. So long as we don't quantify those outputs and we don't know what the impact will be, then it's difficult for us to acknowledge that as being a climate change project. Which leads me to my conclusion. There's a lot of potential that we have to advance in this workshop. So we have seen that there are different interlinkages between issues at the UNFCCC. I would urge each other to try to find answers and ask questions and empathize with each other with these concrete examples. And I would urge you also to try to help the SCF complete their work, because sometimes when negotiators can't complete the work, we just throw it to the SCF and we'll hope that they will bring us a draft decision for us to adapt practically. So that's not necessarily the case. They have a double mandate to address this issue in two different decisions in CP20. And I will finish on a commercial break. I have material that I've brought that summarizes Ecuador's efforts on climate change mitigation. I only have 15. So for those of you that are interested, please come and see me. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andres. Vicky, you're next. I'll give you 6 minutes until I ring the bell for you.
Thank you. But actually, yesterday you said 8 to 10 minutes, and I will comply to those guidelines. That's joke number one on MRP. Happy to join you all on this Saturday morning. Yes, I'm Vicky Nunes. I work for the Flemish government in Belgium as policy advisor on international climate and forest finance. And I really want to thank you to give me the opportunity to come here to this workshop. I will mainly focus on identifying potential improvements, so again, I comply to the guidelines as well, to the existing methodologies for reporting financial information on the UNFCCC, as by doing so you automatically identify the gaps as well, and I think during the two previous presentations a lot of information was already shared. I will also express some views on a possible way forward to implement those improvements under the different bodies of UNFCCC, as this is a joint workshop, including SBI, SOPSA, and the Standing Committee on Finance. I did my homework, Roger, as well, extra points. Having read the technical paper and the different submissions from the parties, it came to my attention that next to the technical gaps, which I will elaborate on in a minute, there is a need to clarify the purpose of reporting as well. In the submissions, two main purposes are actually being identified, and I also found them back in Dennis Terpak's methodology hierarchy. Namely, one is that reporting on the commitments as stipulated in the convention and more recently the Cancun decision, but on the other hand, also providing an overall climate finance overview in a comprehensive way, which goes, of course, beyond just reporting of developed countries. It is clear that when improving the reporting methodologies, those purpose needs to be constantly envisaged to ensure that the necessary information can be distilled out to reporting efforts, that we don't report just for the sake of reporting, but that we actually lead to the goals set by UNFCCC. On improvements, I believe that the buy-in reports have great potential to enhance overall transparency of support provided to developing countries, but the current guidelines and common tabular formats don't permit to provide the level of comparability and transparency requested on the UNFCCC. From a donor reporter point of view, this is quite frustrating, as it takes a lot of efforts to find out which data and which type of information is required, which of course has its repercussions on how the information is collected and finally presented, to only learn that those efforts do not lead to the required level of insight, let alone a coherent and comparable overview. So in short, there's definitely scope for improving the guidelines of the buy-in reports and its common tabular formats. So I actually have six concrete suggestions for improvement of the reporting systems. As said by Andres, there is a lot of convergence already on the need of those improvements, and I hope that this will lead to some further discussion. My first one would be to fine-tune the information presented in the national communications with the data from the buy-in reports. For example, by boosting the existing qualitative information in the national communications with the quantitative information by using the preferably improved common tabular formats of the buy-in reports. This would avoid inconsistent data sets between a party's national communication and buy-in report, and therefore confusion during the review process, which we all had. My second point was also already highlighted by Andres, which is gaining more clarity on the key terminology and working towards common definitions and parameters for reporting. This could result in increased transparency and comparability information, but will also give better guidance to reporting parties, which will enhance consistency and accuracy of the data. Some concrete examples, changing the current three categories provided, committed, and or pledged in the buy-in reports to the two categories committed, dispersed, which are already and much better defined and terminology commonly understood by reporters. Another example is for sectors, use the existing understanding on sectors so parties report in a more common manner. But it goes beyond those specific reporting terms, and parties should at least find a common and practically implementable working understanding of what is international climate finance and mobilized private climate finance. My third point is to take into full consideration the cross-cutting nature of technology transfer and capacity building support. It would be helpful if we considered such activities as integrated part of a coherent reporting methodologies for financial flows, as it is very difficult or closely impossible to enclose this information separately, as is done in the current tabular format of the buy-in report. My fourth point, and I'm happy to see the World Bank here as well, is to invite additional information from the multilateral organizations to have clearer data on how the general contributions by parties were used by these multilateral organizations for climate support. More concretely, in order to allow for a common approach and avoid double counting, the multilateral organizations should disclose which share of parties' core general contributions were used for climate-relevant projects so that parties can calculate the imputed climate finance of parties instead of having parties reporting on core general contributions, which is also one of the points that in the current buy-in reports is creating a lot of confusion and mistrust as well. My fifth point directly goes to the SCF recommendation on how to include or to cooperate with relevant institutions and experts on including from the private sectors to devise practical options for estimating and collecting data on private climate finance. As other parties, Belgium started recently a study which will focus on how to estimate climate change actions of the private sectors, which should lead to useful insights by end of this year. But this is a gradual learning process for many of us, I guess, and it will require some time before it can come to comparable international methodologies, and I think Dennis Terpak's presentation also showed that this would be the case. Finally, the sixth one is to have reporting on climate finance potentially involves a very large number of projects and programs, and it is essential that this is done, especially for smaller donors or small countries, that a simple and functional data import-export function is in place. So the software on the UNFCCC should ensure compatibility with the data standards and formats that are already used and should preferably allow reporting parties to export data from other reporting systems directly to UNFCCC reports. It also seems like this could be the most practical way to really have detailed project-level data. Don't ask us to have the same information twice in a different kind of report. So when we would further improve and develop those methodologies, there are some overall principles to take into consideration. First of all, it is a gradual and incremental learning by doing process, and this requires cooperative action from all parties and various institutions. Secondly, it should be ensured, especially in the longer term, that underlying approaches of the reporting methodologies can be applied by all relevant actors, so that the resulting data are comparable and consistent, which will support trust and credibility among parties. Then the reporting methodology should make the best use of existing data systems and institutions to avoid the creation of any additional inconsistencies or to avoid parallel reporting systems. Like I already said in the beginning, reporting is not a purpose on its own. We don't report just for the sake of reporting, but it has the potential to enhance efficiency and effectiveness of deployment and uses of sources, as it can help to gain a better understanding of the overall scale, the sectoral geographical distribution, and can uncover trends and gaps of financial resources available. To reach this goal, a comprehensive picture of climate finance is needed, which is much broader than just reporting methodologies of developed countries, and should also include information on finance received. This was also one of the recommendations in the Standing Committee Finance Biennial Assessment. So we look forward to also discuss more on the reporting methodologies for support received. Finally, on the way forward, because it's not just about the what, it's also about the how. I would like to provide some views on how to actually tackle those issues within UNFCCC. This is just to trigger some discussion maybe for later. So first of all, again, the recommendations of the SCF already provide some hints on how to do it, but are not concrete enough, and maybe it could be a good idea to clarify, for example, who are the relevant bodies in those recommendations. As said by Ruta, the SBI already has an agenda item on the revision of the guidelines, and maybe the subset could identify improvements to reporting methodologies as input to the SBI work if the timing between the two agenda items allow for such an approach, because as Andra said, SUBSTA should finish its work by COP21. I also believe that the SCF is the best placed to further work on private sector finance and definitional issues, while the common reporting methods for needs and climate finance received hasn't found a home yet. And finally, all this is potentially linked with a transparency framework on a discussion in the ADP. However, how the work is undertaken. As a general principle, I would suggest that we use the efficient time in doing meetings, that we avoid confusion and reduce the overall workload, please. Therefore, it might be advisable that one body takes the lead and the overall responsibility, and if necessary, it requests adequate and specific inputs from the other bodies. Thank you. Unfortunately, I do not have any new material to give as Ecuador, but I recommend everybody to read the very substantial EU submissions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Vicky. That 10 minutes 43. Well, you're saved from the bell by making very precise and concrete suggestions. That was a really useful intervention. Thanks very much. I think next on the list is Stephanie from the OECD. I will give you a little bell at 7 minutes just so you know how you're tracking. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. I represent the OECD's Development Assistance Committee Secretariat, And on behalf of the DAC, thank you very much for inviting us to participate in this workshop. What I've been asked to reflect on in this presentation are views from the OECD drawing on the years of experience that the DAC has on measuring and monitoring development finance, which it's been doing for decades, and in particular kind of the insights that we have and the methods, the approaches that we have for tracking climate-related development finance. All of this is captured in the submission that we sent to the UNFCCC earlier this year. So in terms of what I'm going to present, four key areas really reflecting what was captured in our submission. Firstly, to talk about just some basic concepts for financial reporting that could be useful. Then to talk about essentially our RIA marker data and approach, where it's important to distinguish between first identifying climate-related development activities and then drawing on this data for more quantified reporting to the UNFCCC. And then lastly, I'll talk about how we can, within the DAC system, estimate climate-specific multilateral flows working in collaboration with the MDBs. So firstly, in terms of basic concepts for financial reporting, the DAC has been reporting on development finance for over 50 years, collecting data from DAC members and other organisations. And our experience is that standardised financial data collection concepts are really necessary and provide the basis to support more consistent and comparable and transparent reporting. When you look at the table that you have for your reporting, and as highlighted in the presentations before, there are a variety of just basic financial concepts that are just general, and they relate to all kind of financial data collection rather than climate specific. And for a number of these, the DAC does have existing definitions and classifications that could be used to support members reporting if they wished. This includes exchange rates, definitions for commitments and disbursements, definitions for ODA, instruments and sectors. On ODA, most recently, there were big reforms in the DAC to modernise that definition. I won't go into that detail, but that's also something to think about for the future. In terms of climate-related activities and identifying them, as has already been mentioned, the DAC has a system called the RIA markers, where we have a marker for mitigation and adaptation, where at the project level, at the activity level, we indicate and highlight the policy objectives and identify which policies are targeting climate change as either a principal objective, meaning that activity is explicitly targeting climate change, or as a significant objective, meaning that an activity was taking place but has been adjusted or modified to take into account climate concerns. It's a little bit like taking a list of projects and taking a highlighter pen to them and literally going through and identifying which are climate adaptation, which are climate mitigation, which are both. It's a descriptive marking approach, and I think that's an initial thing to really understand. It's applied ex ante based on project objectives. So it's not based on results, but at the point of a commitment or a disbursement, we're in an ex ante world, and I think all methodologies have that constraint when it comes to financial flows. In terms of the RIA markers, we have been with our members and with broader communities working on a whole work program of improvements over the past 2 years. We did a big significant stock take and review of the use of the RIA markers, and there was a lot of identification for room for improvement with the RIA marker methodology, whilst it was recognised that this is an international definition which is well understood and at the high level used by many others such as the MDBs, CPI, the CPIR process. In terms of the application of the marker, it was also recognised that there is potentially some room for subjectivity and some room for improvement there. So we've been looking at how to fine-tune the definitions, the eligibility criteria, and the guidance that we have. The aim has been to facilitate reporting on the RIA markers, to improve the quality and to improve the harmonisation across reporting practices. And we're now at the stage where we're finalising our plans and proposals for how to change our statistical reporting rules. We're looking to update terminology, in particular to reflect the latest IPCC terminology for adaptation, for instance. And we're also developing an indicative table to really guide the marking and the application of the real markers by sector and subsector. In all our work, one approach that we're really trying to emphasise is to work strongly with other international communities, such as the MDBs and the IDFC, to support everyone in moving towards more common approaches. And we're really drawing on information from the MDBs, such as the positive list, their three-step approach for adaptation, and also guidance from our own members and DFIs, for example, KFW, in terms of how to do this so we can move forward in a common way. Just to give you an example of the tables that we're developing, we're looking to now give guidance related to each sector and subsector within our statistical system and provide an indication of what real mark score might be most appropriate, to give a rationale for what that score is, and to give examples just to help reporting officers with the application of their marker and to reduce subjectivity. And this is just an example. The work is ongoing. It's quite extensive. I just counted the number of pages, and our current draft document has 14 pages of tables based on all the different subsectors to support better reporting. So this is work that's ongoing and will develop over the course of this year, and in particular draw on the latest emerging findings from other groups and discussions. In terms of how the real marked data that identifies climate projects is then drawn on for reporting to the UNFCCC, I think it's really important to be clear and to recognise that there's a big distinction between the climate-related development finance that's reported to the DAC and how members are using this information for their reporting. The real markers are descriptive rather than strictly quantitative. They track mainstreaming and allow for an approximate quantification for finance flows. And we know that majority of DAC members are reporting on this data for the purposes of their reporting to UNFCCC on bilateral ODA, but that many are applying what we call coefficients to scale down these finance flows. So in particular, there are a whole range of approaches, but most do count 100% of what they're marking as principal, but there's a whole variety of reporting approaches when it comes to how to quantify and account for what we class as the significant spend. This ranges from 0 to 100% based on different country approaches. Most apply this at an aggregate level or a sectoral level. A few actually apply this per project. When you look at it at an aggregate level, we have a real range, sort of 20 to 100% with a bit of clustering in the middle. Different approaches might relate to the different nature of members' portfolios and how they're applying the marker. So it's not necessarily strictly the case that one coefficient should apply to all, but it is a concern that there is not much comparability across these approaches, and it could be an area to think about improving. Lastly, within the DAC statistical system, we do have clear categorizations for what counts as bilateral and what counts as multilateral flows, and also approaches to estimate the climate-specific proportion of core contributions to multilateral organizations, which can provide this fuller estimate of provider effort that's required within the reporting tables. It's really important to have this clear categorization between bilateral and multilateral to ensure that there's no double counting across the different information reported, and also to think about common approaches across reporting so that things are not overestimated. In terms of the approach that we have what we call the imputed multilateral kind of methodology for estimating the climate-specific shares of core contributions. There's two steps for calculating this. The first is to estimate the proportion of the activities undertaken by the multilaterals that address climate change. And this is where we've been working in collaboration with the MDBs to collect all their information and to make that assessment. Once we have that share of climate activities within their overall portfolios, we can apply that to a member's core contribution. And with that, we can then estimate the climate-specific share of their core contributions. So if an organisation were to give 100 million pounds to the Asian Development Bank, and if their share is 30%, we would have 30 million US dollars to count. Important to recognize that these estimates provide and reflect climate-related ODA inflows. They don't add to multilateral outflows, and they don't reflect or attribute based on finance funded through MDB's capital resources. So that's my last slide and kind of main point. I think just a few very quick kind of final reflections are that it's, in the short term especially, really important to build on existing systems. I think it's really important to be transparent in the methods that are used for reporting and to communicate these properly, especially when adjustments are made. And I think it's also very important to have good quality assurance and control of reporting. So, thank you.
Thanks, Stephanie. There's some very useful and concrete suggestions in there for how we can do exactly as you've said in your last point, build on existing things, and I think very much about how we can prepare data for use in reporting using the improvements that we will all get to as part of this workshop. So I can't quite see down the table to see who's next down there, but I think it's Weijin. Thanks.
Thank you, Roger. I'm Weijin Liao from the World Bank Group. Just quickly to jump in. As you know, the World Bank, as well as other MDBs, are basically financial institutions, so our main line of business would be financing, and we provide loans, some grants, and do a bit of policy advice. So we've done some reporting over the years for our climate finance support, not as extensive a history as OECD. So some of the practices may be relevant to your discussions, but may not be because, we, after all, are a financial institution, so there may be some differences there. So going straight to some of the points that were mentioned previously, the MDBs, including the World Bank, have been reporting since 2011. We report both mitigation and adaptation financing. We agree on a set of common principles. What is mitigation? What's adaptation? And we also go through a process to determine which in our project portfolio would be considered mitigation and adaptation. So it isn't necessarily an automatic reporting of our financial commitments. We go through a process to determine within each project that's financed, for instance, only specific components are mitigation. So there are no standard coefficients for overall project financing cost that's treated as mitigation. Adaptation is even more processed and laborious, if you can put it that way, because the agreed methodology is to apply a certain test on projects where to qualify as adaptation finance, you need to have shown that the project is working in a context where there's a vulnerability identified and that the project has a component in it that specifically addresses that vulnerability. So when we get our overall financial commitment data, not only do we go through components and sectors to make sure we're counting only the mitigation or adaptation parts, there's also a process that we go through. So all this information is out in the public domain. The World Bank, as well as the other MDBs, have been releasing their information on climate financing since 2011. The last report was released September last year, and we'll be ready to release the latest report, probably this month or maybe next month. So addressing some of the points, I mentioned mitigation and adaptation, there's a process for adaptation. There are extensive typologies for mitigation. We agree on sectors, etc. The report now also makes an attempt to classify the kinds of instruments that we use. Broadly speaking, investment financing and technical assistance is one group, and anything that's more policy-based or budget support operations is a separate group. Going forward, we will try and have that reporting done at a more granular level to loans, grants, and maybe guarantees, but we don't know how far it will go, but we are attempting to become more granular where that's concerned. I should mention that as financial institutions, many of us are delivering financing using funds that we raise from the capital markets. Part of those funds, part of our financing are from contributions made directly and each year from shareholder countries. For instance, in the World Bank, we have a large grant program that we administer on behalf of donors. It's called IDA. That's largely a grant or low-interest loan program. So for those, you would be able to sort of track how much is coming in from donors. On our reporting, though, we're focusing very much on the implementation or allocation side. So the data that we have available would largely be how much has IDA, how much IDA has been used to finance what projects. So there's a bit of reconciliation, which we provide data to countries and OECD who do the reconciliation, because as I understand it, since our reporting is focused on how the funds are used, and for funds that come to us through that are reported as multilateral contributions, that's really on the incoming side for us, on the funds mobilization side. So we have some data on that, but ultimately there'll still be some reconciliation needed on the supply side. So there was a question about challenges in reporting. Many of the MDBs have a semi-automated system, including for the World Bank. In our overall financial database, first of all, in the normal project cycle, you go through different steps in typical project financing. Many of us have similar business models, so all the MDBs agree to report financial commitment numbers as opposed to, you know, figures that are dispersed versus committed. So that's one decision that, you know, any kind of reporting methodology would need to make, and for us it's commitment. But because the methodology requires us to be quite strict about what we count as mitigation and adaptation, when the financial data comes to the climate change group in the World Bank, for instance, there's a bit of a quality control where we go through the process, and a lot of what is flagged as climate-related gets weeded out in the process so that we report only a segment of what's flagged in the system in accordance with the methodology. In addition to that, many of you probably know that there are projects that have both mitigation and adaptation benefits, and in order for that to be no double counting, we do an internal reconciliation so that for any particular project, the overlaps are eliminated. So that's an additional manual exercise, if you will, that's required. So probably won't be possible to automate everything, but ideally there'll be a mix of both automatic systems and manual quality control. Just looking through my notes to see if there's anything else. Currencies, we all report on US dollars, even though many of us provide local currency financing. And I think that was about it. Thank you.
Perfectly timed. And last but not least, Marcelo, over to you.
Thank you, Roger. And good morning, everybody. My name is Marcela Jaramillo. I work as a policy advisor on international climate finance on E3G, an independent organization based in London. And I also have the opportunity to join the advisory technical committee of the Latin American Climate Finance Group. And we thank both organizations the invitation to participate in this workshop, to share with all of you the experiences that we, the both organizations, have had, particularly in Latin American countries, on working on climate finance issues. We would like to share with you some key challenges and some recommendations that we believe are relevant for this discussion. But before I go into that, I would like to share with you a little bit of what is it that we're doing so you understand what we believe that recipient countries must really be involved in this discussion, not only from understanding the information that is being provided by those that are providing the finance, but also because they will need also guidance and methodologies for themselves be able to as well measure, monitor, and report those finance flows so they have a full picture of those financial flows that they are receiving. So just to tell you a little bit of our experience, in E3G, we have been working on with various governments in Latin America on developing and implementing national finance strategies. Those national finance strategies are stakeholder engagement of public and private entities that are relevant for implementing climate action in the countries. And that is looking to have a long-term vision with specific action points at the short, medium, and long term, so they can actually implement the actions that are on their plans. As part of that process, one of the key issues is to try to really better align the international support that is coming to the countries to those national priorities and strategies that they are doing. So in the process of doing that, we start looking into, okay, which is the financial flow that are receiving these countries and where is it going, so we can start building that picture and organizing the plans. But that is one of the first challenges we face when we start working with the governments. It's really, really difficult to understand what finance flow is coming in the country for a number of reasons I will share. One of the things that we find is that there is little understanding of those flows, and the way it's going about to understand them varies from country to country. So it's really a wide range of views into these kind of issues. And so this becomes a very challenging issue, and at the end of the day, it's very difficult to draw information that can help to make good decisions on those investment plans that the countries are trying to do. So we realized that one of the issues that we needed to start looking into is precisely MRBO finance and including methodologies for reporting, which is what we're discussing now. And we started looking and working closely with processes such as the OECD, Rio Markets, and in the Latin American region, particularly working with the Latin American Climate Finance Group, GFLAC, who has been doing a very interesting experience in developing and applying a methodology for tracking climate finance in a number of Latin American countries. So from those experiences of trying to build these financial strategies in countries and trying to track the information, we would like to share with you three key issues that we think are the trickiest one from the recipient country point of view. So the first challenge is one that I think everybody has already mentioned, so we kind of all agree, and is the lack of common concepts on climate finance. And that underlines of how do we have a common way to characterize what actions we consider are climate finance and are being addressed by those flows that are coming into country. And that is very important because it's very difficult to speak the same language in this process. And to understand the assumptions behind our reporting exercise. So it becomes very frustrating, as he was mentioning, for everybody who is doing the effort to track, report climate finance. They have all different methodologies, and at the end of the day, all those efforts tell us very little information that can help us to have those strategies on national level and be better informed. We do think that this work, particularly under the UNFCCC, can really help to define those common methodologies that make the comparison much easier and really help inform decisions at country level. The second point is the level of decentralization and dispersion of the information. So when you are a country and you're trying to understand the picture of what are those climate finance flows, let alone the fragmentation we already know are on all the flows that are coming from different sides, it's very difficult to find a point where you can find more of the information. So you probably will have to look to different systems and speak with different people from the providers, and as well at national level, you will have to speak across different ministers and agencies, and they will probably all give you information that are very difficult to compare. So once again, you're missing information that are very valuable for you to understand what decisions to make on the ground. And this is very important because one issue that we would like to underline is that the MRB system of climate finance will be sustainable to the extent that national mechanisms are in place and can act effectively. And that's a key point, and therefore it's very important to stop that exercises, really work with the bottom-up exercises, because otherwise it won't really be sustainable in the long term. So we believe that a robust common system developed under the UNFCCC to track and understand climate finance can incentivize and facilitate the creation of those national systems that can really support and gather the information and make it more transparent and generate more accountability. And this, in time, will help to an issue that is really increasingly frustrating also at national level, and is the issue of improving coordination and avoiding the duplication of efforts, because many times we have found that financial flows in the same country are going to the same kind of projects, same kind of studies, and it's just a lack of coordination and having more communication. So if you have a little bit more of a centralized point, then you can maybe find yourselves realizing, okay, this has been done, we can do something else with these financial flows and make more effective use of that. And that is just useful for providers and recipients. And the final point that we have found is the quality and availability of information. And that is, again, a point that I think most people here has mentioned, and is really how much that information is telling us, what is the level of granularity that we have in that information, in a way that we can understand what sort of activities are being covered with that climate finance. So climate finance can be covering administrative processes, can be covering a team, can be covering actual projects, and at the moment it's really hard to know how much of that finance is being used for what. So it's hard to really understand and address where are the gaps and how can we best use that finance. So just having that transparency and disaggregation of what that finance is being used for will really help everybody to make a better use of financial flows. So just to try to finalize, I will pass to the three very specific points, recommendations that we want to make for everybody based on those experiences. So the first one is we really would like to recommend that the Standing Committee of Finance to integrate measuring, reporting, and verification methodologies that capture information from both developed and developing countries and define a common criteria to characterize actions to be considered as climate change. This is really to also underline an issue that was said before. Reporting is not something alone that will help us to progress the agenda. You really need a comprehensive MRV system that gives us the answers that we need to be more effective on actions on the ground in developing countries when we receive the finance. And I'm aware that this may be looking as a burden share for some developing countries, but I would like to underline this is a win-win situation for them, because it will really help to understand them, the finance flow they have, the gaps, and how can they build those financial strategies that will make a better use of the resources that are available. And it's important to understand as well that we are not starting from zero. There are many methodologies and efforts already underway by the OECD, the multilaterals, the UNFCCC, and we need to build on that. The second point is define a reporting procedure of the flow of resources according to the analysis criteria defined in that methodology, in that common methodology, that allows detailing the financial contributions. So that is about properly breaking down the information so we can have a better understanding of what those ballpark numbers actually mean. And in a way that the set of information from developed and developing countries can be comparable. And on a specific point there is to build again on something that is already out there, and is the Binalia report and the Binalia updated report, which are coming from developing countries. But again, they still don't have developed a methodology that guide them and help them to understand how can themselves drive that information. So we would like also to recommend that the reporting methodologies this chooses under SOPSTA should be extended to developing countries so you can develop guidelines to help them. And finally, it's important that the information is made available publicly and transparently. And websites are also very helpful for everybody around the world to help this and to keep that information as updated as possible, because many times you have information from 3 years ago, so it's hard to really know where we are at the moment. So those are the three key points. Thank you.
Thanks very much, discussant. There really are some good take-home messages there, and I think as you now break off into our discussion groups, I think, to my mind, there are a couple of key things to think of, and one of them really is, you know, what can we do to build on what we already have, both in terms of preparing data for reporting and in terms of our actual reporting methodologies. And then, you know, what are some concrete steps to improve reporting methodologies for reporting financial information? We've had some really good concrete suggestions there, some of which I think are a really good starting point for your discussions now. So I would really encourage you to focus on that and think about, you know, what we can do collectively to improve the reporting methodologies for financial information. Now, we've got three very talented and disciplined and rigorous discussion leaders who will not have their own bells, which is, I'm sure, a tragedy for them, but not for me because I keep this one. And they will lead our discussion now. I see we've got, as you can see, one, two, three flip charts, which will be the focus of our discussion zones. After 20 minutes, you'll get the opportunity to move from one to the other. Again, I'd encourage the discussion leaders after that time to really summarise where we've got to, so that new people that come in know where you're at and can build on that. If you feel like the discussion's going particularly well and you don't really want to move, then by all means stay there. I think our focus really is to get the best information we can to build on our on the work as we head towards the decision we need to take in Paris later in the year. We've got four guiding questions. We'll leave them up here on the screen. But what we suggest is that each of the three discussion leaders take one as their starting point, leaving the fourth one perhaps as an overarching theme for people to dip in and out on as they focus on the first one. We had a very quick discussion about this yesterday, and I think Jorge has put his hand up to lead off on the first one. What are the gaps in methodologies for the reporting of financial information? Sarah put her hand up to use the second one as a starting point for the discussions she's facilitating. And Gary, because you weren't there, we've left you with the third one. By all means, though, you know, perfect. Draw on that as you go. So head on up, I think. Jorge will start you off in the back. Sarah, take the corner here. And Gary, if you don't mind leading your discussion over in this corner, have a stretch, invigorate yourselves, reflect, and gird your loins for some good discussion. Thanks very much. Off you go.